You are now listening to the Claim It podcast with me, your host, Trisha Huffman, your joyologist. On this podcast, whether it's a solo episode or a conversation with someone who inspires and intrigues me, my hope is for you to feel a little bit less alone on this wild and windy journey of being human, that you meet yourself with deep compassion, that you open yourself up to some new perspectives, or maybe get reminded of perspectives that you have forgotten because we're human and we forget. I hope that you see that you can make a change at any time, and most of all, be reminded that this is your freaking life and no one else's. So claim it and claim your joy, your worth, your enoughness, your fulfillment right now, not out there somewhere. Once I have this, do this, be this. You can claim it right freaking now, and I really invite you to do so. On today's episode, I have Light Watkins. He was on, I want to say a little over a year ago, and now he's back because he has a new book out called Travel Light. And it is about this concept that he started to develop called spiritual minimalism. What the heck is spiritual minimalism? Well, you're going to find out. And you're going to find out some ways to start to apply that to your life. Listen to this episode and go back and listen to Light's first episode, getting into his journey as to how he became this meditation guide and teacher and speaker, author, all the things. All right, I was about to say here we go, but I want to remind you to please, if you have not yet, follow/subscribe the podcast and leave a review. And if you do leave a review, you can screenshot it and send it to podcast@yourjoyologist.com, and I'll send you a little gift from my product line. Go shop the product line because products are disappearing fast. shop.yourjoyologist.com. Here we go. Hi. So you're back again.
I'm back.
New project. And I believe when you were on the first time and we went through the life journey from modeling, why did I just have like a Jesus? Was there like a model that looked like Jesus or something? Why did I just get a Jesus image in my head? Did you get
anything like Jesus.
No, not you, but like maybe I'm thinking of the model that like somehow changed your life or like maybe,
oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Was there some correlation?
That story. Yeah. No, I equated that guy who I met on South Beach with being like Jesus in terms of him telling me to become vegetarian, and I listened to him.
There we go. I was like, where am I getting a Jesus reminder from? That's funny. But yeah, all the ways. But yeah, I think when we were in that conversation, you must have been already writing this book that's coming out now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or maybe is already out when you're listening to this. Yes.
Yeah. It'll be out by the time this comes out. Travel Light.
And so I want to, so since I like going into like the journey of it, I think you might have told a little bit of it on that episode, but nobody, who knows? People, we don't remember. We don't remember
anything, right? I barely remember. And I was the one.
Exactly. I'm like, that's why I was like, why am I thinking of Jesus, right? But yeah, so first of all, yeah, what made you want to write this book, The Travel Light? Because is that Travel Light? Did I just say the wrong title?
No, it's Travel Light.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's the spiritual minimalism. Is stuck in my head, which is
that's what I want. I want that term spiritual minimalism to be stuck in here.
There we go. That's what, like, that was like what was in my head. So I was thinking like, wait, is that the title? But it's probably the subtitle.
Yeah. Cause I want it. Look, I don't want this. I don't want people thinking this is a travel book or that this is a book about getting rid of all your belongings and living out of a backpack, which has been a part of my story. But it's really a book about spiritual minimalism. So spiritual minimalism is, let's just break it down. So minimalism is basically getting rid of things. Spiritual minimalism, or spiritual, means something that's happening from the spirit or from the inside out. So So this book is about getting rid of things from the inside out. In other words, instead of taking the more conventional approach to minimalism, which is, oh, let me clear out my living room and get rid of this old couch and, you know, clean out the closets and clean underneath the bed. And we do all this spring cleaning and purging with the intention of potentially creating a new, a higher vibration in that space. In other words, I'm going to feel peace because I cleared everything out. But that's not really how it works. The way it works is if you're miserable inside and then you become a minimalist, you'll become a miserable minimalist. So if you want to really experience more peace, you have to clean out the internal clutter. You have to let go of the internal baggage that you may have been carrying around your whole life from whatever your parents did or didn't do, whatever your caretakers did or didn't do, whatever traumas you were experiencing as a kid. And we don't realize how much control those old stressors still have over the way we live our lives today and the way that we think our belief systems and what we think is possible for ourselves. And so I'm reminded of a quote by this guy named Robert Persick, who wrote one of my favorite spiritual books called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. He said, "The only Zen you're going to find at the top of a mountain is the Zen you bring up there with you." So everywhere you go, there you are. And what you're feeling inside is filtering through whatever's happening on the outside. So you can be in a technically beautiful place, but if you're not experiencing internal beauty and peace, then you're not going to be able to see it for its full capacity. And that's the essence of spiritual minimalism or travel light, is to give people a framework to create and cultivate more of that inner peace so that they can then improve their degree of presence, their degree of compassion, generosity, patience, and all the things that we say we want, but we try to get them from the outside in. As soon as I make my first million, then I'm gonna have peace of mind. You know, that's not how it works. As soon as I get married, I'm gonna feel safe. That's not how it works. You know, it's a big setup. It's a big trap, and we delude ourselves into thinking that achievements are the pathway to happiness, peace, and actually, it's an inside out proposition.
Yeah, I'm with you all the freaking way. I mean, I feel like that's been one of the cores of things I've been sharing since I started sharing things like online. It's like, it's not out there. And for me, working with people, you know, from even the first career of being a sound engineer too, like working with people that we think have it all and really like do, was seeing, oh, they're still a human with all the baggage of human, the way our brains are wired to, you know, like they have regret, they have shame, they get comparison, they get judgments, like, you know, like we're humans. And in many ways, oftentimes, once you hit these goals and have these achievements and have all the stuff, many ways your life can get more complicated and more stressful. And people still, I'm shocked when people don't understand that. To this day, even now, these days where there are more like celebrities and success outwardly and inwardly, but you know, we look at them outwardly successful people and think they're like talking on podcasts more vulnerably, right? About like, yes, we're humans and this and that. And I'm still shocked at how many people will be like, well, if they have everything, or if you have, like, what do you mean they're unhappy? Like, I'm like, what? How can people still like not get it?
That's how deep our conditioning is, though. You know, that's how deep it is. And it goes much deeper than we think we even realize. Because you're right, when things like Will Smith slapping Chris Rock happens, people are shocked. Because in the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, these guys have so much money and so much, you know, so many accomplishments. How could they do that? How could they be involved in this situation? And it's like, well, they're people with unresolved trauma. And it's
like, how can they have emotions and they maybe not handle them in the best way or like whatever? Oh, yeah. No, and same, obviously, with the shoulds. Like, that's what my whole F the Shoulds mission is like realizing that how much of the stuff that we're wired from it is the conditioning of the things. And so often people don't even realize what they're doing or thinking or choosing. It's just based on this conditioning. So I want to get though, like, was it your going through the idea of starting to like travel light yourself with what you were carrying around with you that got you like looking at this in a deeper way? Because yeah, like let's think about, because right, does it start there where you're actually, because you did end up like living out of, do you still live out of a backpack? I feel like you've been more in one place, but anyway, you start actually traveling light. But at that point you were a meditation guide, teacher, had books out. You're obviously spiritual that were you, but did that journey of actually having less physical items like make this start to like unwind more in your own brain, or like how did that happen?
Yeah, so I in 2018, just to give your listeners the backstory, 2018 I moved out of my apartment in Venice, California, and I moved into a carry-on bag. I just had a carry-on. I got rid of everything that did not fit into my carry-on bag.
And what triggered that? What the heck was happening in your life?
What initiated that?
Or not happening.
What was not happening? Exactly. That's an even better question. No, really, I consider it to be an inner calling or directive, right? And sure, there were some inspirations. I had a friend of mine who had been doing something similar. I've watched the Minimalist documentary in 2016. I, you know, had been doing a lot of spiritual work, deep inner work. But the real time that all of this started was when I started taking my meditation practice seriously in 2003. Because one of the unexpected side effects is you just become less and less attached to things. And I just noticed that showing up over the years, like things that didn't go my way. I would be bummed out for a bit, but you know, I would be able to rebound fairly quickly and keep going. And my resiliency level went up as my ability to handle rejection also went up. And I attribute that to meditation, just to understand this deep knowingness that I'm always where I'm supposed to be. And that's something I started writing about a lot. It's something I teach about a lot, which is nature's rejection is nature's protection. So it gets to the point where you realize you can't really go wrong. If you're following that inner guidance relentlessly, it's always going to lead you to a place that's better than whatever you've imagined for yourself. And if I look at my life today, 2023, right? I'm here having this conversation with you on my iPad. I don't own a laptop. I'm going by this name that I wasn't born with. I'm living in Mexico City of all places. I'm a podcaster. I'm a meditation teacher. I'm a keynote speaker. None of those things I went to college for. You know, it's just, I could keep going, but there's so many things that I could have never planned for myself in a million years. I never would have imagined that I would be in this situation. And yet here we are. And so if that can happen within the span of however many years, then who's to say what's going to be happening 10 years from today or 20 years from today? And the only common denominator in all of those instances is that at some point, I followed my heart. I did something that my inner guidance told me to do. So that occurred in 2018, and that's what propelled me to start living out of a carry-on bag and traveling around the world and then getting so close to this practice of literal minimalism, because you can't fit but so much stuff into your carry-on bag, I started to develop my own framework around that. And having written a couple of books before, you know, you start to see the world in books. You start to think to yourself, oh, this will make an interesting book. I could teach other people how to do this. So I would say that's the catalyst for this book, Travel Light. Was after a couple of years, I reached out to our agent, Colleen, and I said, what do you think about doing a book on minimalism and on, you know, but a different take on it, not from the outside in, but from the inside out. And she was into it. And And what's funny is I talked a little bit about my journey in my last book, Knowing Where to Look, and the editor of that book started to travel nomadically as well. The one person who edited my book. So I was like, okay, well, this is some powerful stuff. And yeah, and then she was on board. And so that set the whole thing into motion. And then cut to here we are with this book in my hands, Travel Light, Spiritual Minimalism to Live a More Fulfilled Life.
But going back, so that like inner nudge, inner knowing that was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go travel, and I'm not just going to go travel. I'm going to not, you know, I'm like give up my apartment and not have a place. And did you get rid of everything? Did you keep some things in storage and like get rid of big items? Like, were you just like, and also, I mean, I'm in a place of my, if I didn't have kids right now, I would probably be in a like, I'm going to pick up. I am like, I'm going to like, I'm craving change and let's go shake it up, because I'm someone that loves that though. I love change and experience and adventure. So I am trying to figure out, okay, I can't do everything I want to do right now, but how can I bring in those elements of change and adventure and different experiences with my current reality? But anyway, so like I get that urging, but still like, yeah, I mean, and again, so it's like, I'm asking you, but I've had my own experiences of giving all my things up, moving across the country. I'm going to go here. Oh, I just moved here and I like it here, but now I'm going to go to Italy. Wouldn't that be cool? So I've done my own experiences up like that too. But so like, yeah, like, did you give everything up? And it was just again, like, yeah, why not? Like, all right, I just feel like traveling. Did you have I'm going to go for a year. I'm going for 6 months. I'm like, or are we just like, you know what? I feel the urge to go. And so I'm going to go.
Wow, these are good questions. there's a principle of spiritual minimalism that I call the freedom of choicelessness. And as a part of my
choice,
process.
Wait. The freedom of choicelessness.
Choicelessness.
Oh, love it.
And, you know, it kind of ties to the whole idea that the more options you have, the more paralysis you get. That's where you get paralysis analysis. Do I keep this or do I put it in storage? Do I let this go or do I hold on to it? You know, I don't want to be going through all that. So I decided there would be no storage. There would be no fallback situation in case things don't work out. There are things that I definitely, you know, thought twice about getting rid of, like yearbooks, scrapbooks, hard copies of photos, letters, you know, things that would be considered sentimental items. And giving myself the freedom of choicelessness, meaning I can't take it with me. What am I going to do with it? I have to do something with it. I decided that the best thing to do would be to just scan everything in, all the different photos and letters and journal pages. And then I threw everything away.
Wow. So you really like got rid of everything.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Think about all the stuff you have, right? And how often you really go through it and look at it. Probably, what, once every few years or something like this. And so I thought about that because I had to think about it, right? There was no option to store it anywhere. So I had to really think about this stuff in a deep way. And I thought about death, and I thought about, you know, when people die, and nowadays on social media, you know, there are images that get posted of people when they pass away. Like, let's take someone like Steve Jobs, right? The person who literally created the phones that a lot of us have and the camera rolls. And how many photos of Steve Jobs, the creator of the iPhone, have we seen out there since he's passed away? Probably, what, half a dozen, maybe a dozen photos? Are either of us as important as Steve Jobs? Do we need 20,000 photos, really, out there in the world? Like, who's going to be looking through all this crap? Probably nobody. And
no, I get that.
Just being honest with myself about that and saying, okay, well, do I really need to hold on to all these hard copy photos? And if something were to happen, just giving myself the benefit of the doubt, maybe I will be this, you know, legendary figure in human history, and there'll be a museum dedicated to me. Well, I'll scan these photos in at very high resolution, and then people can just reprint it and post it up in the museum. I'm sure the people going to the exhibit won't give a shit if it's an actual hard copy versus if it's a reproduction. They just want to see what the person looks like, right? So when we get over ourselves in that way and just like get on with it and just realize that the moments that we're trying to hold on to so dearly are prohibiting us from having the same degree of sentimental connection to what's happening right now, then we can have more presence in whatever we're experiencing right now, and we can build new memories right now. And so, you know, again, it's just an interesting belief system that we oftentimes think that our best days are behind us, as evidenced by the stuff we're clinging on to. But what if your best days were ahead of you? What if the moments that are going to be most sentimental at the end of the day, when your deathbed, haven't even happened yet, and that they will happen, and more of them will happen if you're more present to them? So I don't have hard answers for these questions, but I'm just, you know, these are the questions that I'm exploring for myself. And maybe one day I'll write a new book about all of my discoveries in this way. And maybe the people who have the storage rooms were right all along. I don't know. But but my heart told me to try this other thing out, and it's using me as a way of documenting these experiences, and I'm just going with it and not trying to question it too much. And no, there's not a plan for how long it's going to last or when it's going to end or any of that stuff. That's part of the lifestyle. That's the discipline.
Hey, Trisha here, dropping in with a reminder that hydration is really freaking important. Especially during these hot summer days, proper hydration helps regulate body temperature, keeps your joints lubricated, helps deliver nutrients to cells, keeps your organs functioning properly, improves sleep quality, cognition, mood, and honestly, so much more. But I know, I love to drink water, ice cold water in the summer, but it can get a little bit boring and tedious. That's why I love to add Sprout Living's new Color Fuel Hydration Powder. It's packed with coconut water, essential electrolytes, trace minerals, and powerful superfoods and adaptogens like lemon and baobab to support all-day hydration and provide other nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, and magnesium. It's super easy. You just put one little scoop in your water. You can shake it up, swirl it around. You can also add it to like iced teas or make like a little mocktail with it. It has a slightly sweet and lemony flavor. It's really refreshing. It's really freaking easy to drink. And it's also ultra clean, meaning it gives you the good stuff that you want. And it's not made with any gums, thickeners, sugar alcohols, all those added things. Go check out sproutliving.com. Use code CLAIMIT20 for 20% off your order while you're there. So this one, the hydration, definitely need. By the way, I'm using it a lot more in the summer. It's also great for working out. I also definitely use it in the morning if I've drank any alcohol the night before. Those are all many ways that having this extra hydration really, 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 really helps and makes me feel a lot better. And while you're over at sproutliving.com, get yourself a sampler pack of their protein blends or just go all in. I love their protein powders so freaking much. They are full of the best ingredients. It's not just protein. They have adaptogens, nootropics. They are made so mindfully and they taste so freaking good. So it makes it easy to make a smoothie and not have a zillion ingredients. It also is really easy to put a scoop in like yogurt. I've been doing that a lot in mornings. A scoop in like, I've been doing Kite Hills vegan like Greek yogurt and then some fresh berries. So good. Put a scoop in water, all the things, an easy way to add protein and all these amazing other nutrients to your body. Go check them out. Sprout Living. Use code CLAIMIT20 for 20% off sproutliving.com. Yeah, no, I'm with you with that. I do have like one sort of photo box that has pictures in it and stuff like that. And I don't know. And they're things that like were at my mom's house, you know, like from high school, whatever this. And then she, over the years, as I come home, then she's like giving me things back and I don't care. Like, here, take your yearbooks. And I'm like, no, you can just throw them away. Okay, this, whatever. But I still have like, I have like a box of photos. And yeah, you're right. I mostly, it's like pull them out. My kids recently have asked to see pictures of my dad who passed away before they were born, whatever. So I was like, okay, let me go in the books. But I'm like, I go in that box. I probably could keep like 5 of the photos, to be honest. Like, I don't even have that much stuff. But yeah, but that's the thing too. I've gone through so many of my own, like, let me, but I've never gotten rid of everything. I always had even like a couple extra bins of clothes, either at a storage unit or a friend's house, and like a box, one Tupperware bin of like the, you know, memory like item stuff, like not a lot of stuff. But I remember when I first went on tour for the first time and I way overpacked. I probably even had 2 suitcases, was just terrible. Like, in that you're living in, I'm in a different city every day and on a bus and all of things like that. And by the end of the tour, then like clearing out the bus, my suitcase is like jam-packed because I probably bought more stuff on tour as well. And I'm like so annoyed by all of the things that I'm trying to stuff into my suitcase and backpack to come home. And then I came home to, I mean, a small 2-bedroom tiny house that I lived in, but still it was, my closet was full of stuff. And then I was like, I was so annoyed with all the stuff after like living out of my suitcase for a couple months. So it's like, that was for me, like when I started to like, I love clothes and I don't need this many options. I don't need these things. And it really is it's really freeing. I want to go back to like what you said of the choicelessness. What was the phrase?
The freedom of choicelessness.
I love that. Cause yeah, people, including myself, can get paralyzed with choices. Like even like what, oh, I need a new, whatever, pan. What pan do I buy? Like, there's too many pans to choose from. Like, it's like of the smallest like things. It can be like, oh, which do I buy? So how would you apply that to other areas in people's lives? Like you said, you sort of gave yourself like, I'm not going to even give myself, what am I keeping and what am I not in storage? I'm not going to have storage. So then you don't have that. But like, how are other ways people can apply that? The power of choicelessness. Is that what it was?
So Einstein said, you can treat life as though everything is a miracle or as though nothing is a miracle. In other words, either everything is sort of random, just happening randomly, or it's all connected and everything is happening for your highest and best good. And so if you sit with that and here's the thing, nobody knows 100%. Like, which is which? Nobody knows for a fact that everything is a miracle. Nobody knows for a fact that everything is random. But we've all experienced moments of serendipity where you thought about someone and then you saw that person, or they called you or they texted you and you text them back. Oh my God, I was just thinking about you and now you reached out to me. So who knows if that's coincidence or if that's serendipity. But what I've found is that if you just adopt one of those points of views, because it can't really be both. It can't be everything is connected and everything is random. It's either one or the other, right? And you get to decide for yourself, which one do you want to invest in? Which one do you want to invest your choices in? And my recommendation, and this is the freedom of choicelessness, is to adopt the mindset or the belief set or the heart set that allows you to be the best version of you, right? And so it doesn't matter if other people believe in it or not. It doesn't matter if people push back or not. That's the one that you've decided. And they're investing in their own thing. Everyone else has, they're investing in one of those two paths. So you get to invest in the one that you want to invest in that helps you become the best version of you. And then that becomes a really beautiful editor for why you do the things that you do and who you surround yourself with and what projects you take on and, you know, all of these little choices that we have in life that we may spend a lot of time going back and forth. If you just kind of filter it through whatever your belief set is, then it gives you the freedom. You don't have to sit there and deliberate because you've adopted the belief set that allows you to be the best version of you, and that becomes your life editor. So that's another way of thinking about this idea of freedom of choicelessness.
I don't know. When you were saying all of that, what I was getting, and I don't know if this is part of what you're saying at all, was like sort of, it doesn't really matter. Like so often we're putting so much pressure on our choices. And sometimes too, that might be from, again, this conditioning of sort of like, am I making the right choice of this? What do they think this, blah, blah, blah. This is the right, like trying to like, we're like, we don't realize that we're putting it through maybe all of these like analyzations of which is the right choice. And when really it could just be what you're saying is like, yeah, like you're saying to put it through your, you know, lens of perspective is that so what can be making it so hard is because we're not.
We're like, so concerned about what people think. You know, when we extrapolate it, whatever we consider to be right is what other people are going to think is right. So we don't look stupid, silly, gullible, naive. And again, that becomes more and more irrelevant the more we kind of double down on whatever path we choose for ourselves. Because everyone has to choose. It's like people say, you know, I'm anti-religious. Okay, that's fine. You're anti-religious, but that doesn't mean you're pro atheism, and atheism has its own set of rules, and the people who talk about it, maybe you're what's his name, the Sam Harris, maybe that's, he's your guru, you know, because he's like the head of the atheists, and he tells the atheists how they should be thinking about atheism. So it's still a form of religion. It's just that you don't worship this particular type of God. And I'm not saying one is bad and one is good, but that's a framework through which you make decisions, right? So everybody has that framework. And I think when you realize that, you become less and less concerned about what other people think, because other people's opinions are being filtered through their framework. Your opinions are being filtered through your framework. And so you just want to make sure that you're not adopting a framework that has been impressed upon you. You want to be conscious as you choose whatever framework you decide to see your life through. And I suggest choosing one that allows you to be the best version of you.
Yeah. No, I think it is a lot of like that. Yeah. Like, what are other people going to think? And like, what is the right choice? But then, like I said, it can sometimes be we're in this paralysis of like what we're spending our money on, like which is the best choice, whatever. And for me, like, I have to remind myself to like, okay, I'm worried about wasting my money on what if I buy something that's not the quality, but now I'm wasting hours and hours and hours of my time trying to figure out which to buy, you know, just like, all right, just like, so I sometimes would have to in the past, just like push myself like, all right, just go. And if it's not the right thing, then it's not the right thing. You can choose again, or you're going to return it or whatever. It's like, sometimes again, these small things can really like weigh on us. But I was realizing, well, I'm wasting my time and my energy here trying to do all the research in all the world about what is the best whatever item to buy.
And that's the paralysis part. You know, there's so many options. I don't want to make the wrong choice. And a lot of times that could mean that maybe you don't even need the thing. If you're going that back and forth that much, maybe it's not even something you need right now.
Right. Lots of like, okay, what am I doing here with my time? You didn't really, I don't know if we talked about it. So yeah, when you left on that trip, you went into a carry-on bag. You got rid of everything. Like that still is like shocking to me that you got rid of seriously everything besides what fit in your carry-on bag. No storage. No, my friends are holding this. No mailing stuff home to family.
No.
Jesus.
I mean, look, okay, so let me be completely transparent. There were occasions where I would stay at someone's house and then I would like maybe buy a different pair of shoes thinking I was going to use those shoes, and then I didn't end up using them, and then I left them in that person's closet, and then I left and went somewhere else. And then a year later, I would come back around and those shoes were still there. It's like, oh, those are interesting. Let me try those on. So, you know, these kinds of little, but it wasn't like I needed these things, you know, it wasn't like I was storing them because I needed them one day. But yeah, I mean, there were some occasions where things like that would happen.
But I mean, just even that initial purging is still like such a big thing. Did you have any like, do you remember like going through that and the emotions? Cause I remember one time going through my stuff when I was like, oh yeah, I was like, I thought I was going to go travel the world for who knows how long. It didn't end up lasting very long. but I did like get rid of I didn't get rid of everything like you, but I got rid of almost everything and whatever. And even I got rid of some really like pieces of clothing that were really sentimental. Like I remember giving away the dress that I wore to my dad's funeral. And I was like, I know I probably will never wear this. And it was a dress I had, like it wasn't one I had bought for the funeral or anything too. But like, I remember like having emotional like breakdowns as I was like putting things in donation piles and like stuff or like this, like, I'm going to hold on to this. Like, no, I don't need this like sort of thing. Like, did you have, were there some things that you really struggled with or even, and then once you started that journey and only had that stuff, did you immediately feel free or was there a bit of like, oh, I wish I had this or what about?
You know, again, freedom of choices. I gave myself 30 days to get rid of 4 decades worth of stuff. So I didn't have a lot of time to go back and forth over whether I should keep this or don't keep this. I was just trying to get rid of everything as much as possible. And oddly enough, the hardest things to get rid of were my plants. That was probably the thing that I thought about the most when people would come to look at the plants. And I was like, so where do you live again? Describe your space to me. Because I, you know.
Where do you see this in your apartment?
Yeah. I developed a relationship with my plants. And one woman who actually acquired them, I think I just gave them away for free, but I wanted to give them to the right people. She would send me photos from time to time of the plants, which was really nice.
That's so sweet.
Now I don't remember the plants. Like if you sent me photos of my plants, I wouldn't recognize them. But everything else was just like replaceable for the most part, you know? Everything was replaceable. Because it's not like I was a hoarder and then I became a minimalist. Like I had already been like getting rid of things that I felt were unnecessary for years. And then when I finally moved out into my carry-on bag, after about 6 months, I realized I still had too much stuff. And I would feel it more because you're carrying all your stuff with you everywhere you go. So it's not like you can leave some of it home and then just take what you need. You're carrying all of it with you everywhere you go. So that entices you to want to purge even more and just have the essentials. And then the real game changer was learning how to hand wash my clothes. And I don't know why it took me so long, but one day I decided I'm just going to go on. There's got to be, you know, YouTube videos showing how to hand wash clothes properly. And I did. I looked up some of those, started experimenting. I was getting my clothes fresher than the washing machine in like 5 minutes of hand washing. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't even need all these underwear. I don't need all these pairs of pants and shirts. And so I was able to get rid of like half of my wardrobe just based on the fact that I can hand wash. Now, in the place where I am right now in Mexico City, I have a washer and dryer. So I'm not hand washing my clothes, you know, every 2 nights like I do when I'm on the road. But I know how to, I'm very competent in my ability to do it. And I could literally just take one change of clothes and be perfectly fine going on a month long trip somewhere and not feel at all like I'm lacking it because I have the ability to always have fresh clothes anywhere I go. And I turn the whole thing into like a meditation. So it doesn't feel like a hassle.
This just triggered a memory because I was going to say too. So you obviously must have like sort of a uniform, but some people have a uniform, but they have like 20 of the same shirt and, you know, 10 of the same pants. But yours, Liz, like you really are wearing pretty much the same thing every single day. Did you have an experiment in high school wearing a turtleneck?
Yeah. I think that was our first interview, right?
Yeah, that's what I was like, because I was going to ask you about again, like, it both feels freeing to me hearing the idea of you getting rid of everything. And again, like, you don't have the choices of what you're going to wear today because, like, this is it, you know, sort of thing. And then at the same time, like, a bit like, yeah, like, sometimes more, like, it's freeing and, oh, interesting. So then especially, and I don't know if this is more a female thing, I don't think it has to be, but like wearing the same thing every day feels very freeing. And then also like, I do think more women, but not to be our concern, like with, again, it's the worry about what other people think, how freeing that feels, that like, oh, I know that this is what I'm going to wear today. And I don't have to have any stress over what I'm going to wear today and this and that and that. But like, then people can be like, oh, what are people going to think? Cause I wear the same thing every day. And that reminded me that you did that experiment in high school. Do you want to retell? Like, you can do a shorter version, because I think that was really interesting.
Yeah, you're referring to an experiment I ran in high school. I just kind of wondered if people even cared what you wore. And so I wore the same outfit every day for a week. No one said a word. No one.
And it was like, yeah, like, you, yeah, doesn't, wasn't it one, like, wasn't like just like, oh, like all black. It was like,
no, no, I feel like it was like a purple mock turtleneck and some beige pants. And yeah, so I would just come home every day and wash them and then wear them the next day, just waiting for somebody to say something, looking around. No one's paying attention at all. And that's when I realized, oh, everyone's so concerned about themselves. No one even cares what anyone else is doing. And that stuck with me for life. That idea that, you know, you can really just do whatever you want to do. No one really cares. And yeah, so.
And if people had been noticing and like gossiping about you, it never got to you or affected you. So like, who the fuck cares what people, right. And like the people that are talking about you and judging you for that, then like, great. Like, are those people you really value their opinion and that you like want to have a close relationship? Probably not. But yet we're so worried.
Years later, does it even matter?
Exactly. You know?
So yeah, but we make an inordinate amount of decisions based on what other people think. And we won't admit this to ourselves. We'll think it's because of some other reason. But really, again, when you extrapolate it, it's because you're overly concerned about what other people think about you. And those people could be your parents, it could be your siblings, could be your kids, could be,
you know, strangers on the internet.
I don't want my ex to know that I'm, you know, dating this kind of person. It's like, you're not even together with this person anymore. Why do you care what they think? I guarantee you, they don't care as much as you think they care, right? So it's liberating when you can kind of move on from that. And it's a process of continually peeling back the layers, layer after layer after layer, and then ending up in this place where you're just like, oh, you mean I can really do anything. I can give myself permission to do anything I want. You know, the world is full of possibilities that I've been blocking myself from. And so a part of that also is about taking responsibility for where you are and recognizing that you made some choices. You made some choices that steered you in this particular direction. It's not good, it's not bad, it's just it's a result of choices. And that means that if you're the one that's responsible for being where you are now, you can also change that. You can change it starting today, just making some different choices.
Absolutely. I want to. So in the book, I haven't read it, but I paged through. And so there is like a lot of like, yeah, you're taking the idea of the minimalismness and applying it to different aspects from like exercising, meditation, right? Like what is basically the core of it all? Like to me, when I'm hearing that, just like minimalism approach to exercising, minimalism approach to that, then it like just feels like, why the fuck are you making everything so hard? Like, it's like that. It seems like we as humans make things that harder than they need to be. So I don't know what it is, but my, just when I'm like thinking that, then it's like, yeah, like just do like move your body or like go take a walk, like you, whatever, do push-ups. It doesn't have to be like, what is, I think we do. We get so, again, like, what should I be doing? What is the best fitness? Like, what are the, this study on the, this, like, I think we often as humans make things so much harder than we need to and are looking at what are they doing? So that's what I should be doing. So I don't know if that's what it is, but yeah, I want to hear what your like minimalism approach is.
So the approach overall, there's seven principles and they build upon one another. So the first principle is cultivating a connection with your inner guidance, your heart voice. And then the second principle is making your most important decisions from your heart and not from your head. And then we move on to treating life as though there are no throwaway moments, and then giving what you want to receive, which is kind of like the golden rule. And then we're at follow your curiosity. And I make a point saying you never have to worry about your purpose. Just follow your curiosity and your purpose will find you. And then finding comfort in discomfort, and then freedom of choicelessness. So what you're referring to, the exercise bit, which is the minimalist approach to exercise, finding comfort in discomfort. And it's a way of practicing finding comfort in discomfort on a regular basis in a way that benefits you, which is, you know, exercise. And the reason I use that example is because everyone, myself included, has some resistance to exercise. Even David Goggins, you know, the sort of poster boy for extreme movement, he's talks about, you know, sitting up and staring at his shoes for 30 minutes before he goes outside because he has to psych himself up into doing that. And we can all relate to that, where, you know, you should exercise, but because society tells you, but then it just doesn't feel right pushing yourself, and you can come up with all these excuses. And so what I've presented for the reader is a program where you can take away all the shame and the shoulds and the, you know, all the conditioning that we have around it, and just saying, you know, less is actually more. Less on a consistent basis is more than doing a lot on a sporadic basis. So maybe you just do 10 push-ups and that's it. And then the next day you do 11 push-ups and that's it. And you leave yourself wanting more instead of burning yourself out and exhausting yourself and you know, seeing your life flash before your eyes and this kind of thing. And there's a time and place for all of that. But when we're talking about just getting into a habit of daily movement, doing a little bit less than you would normally do, focusing on quality over quantity. And then I present this idea of using affirmations to count your reps, just a way to make it a little bit more interesting, you know, and that way you get to get a little meditation going in there as well. So instead of counting 5 push-ups, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you can use an affirmation such as, I am perfect, whole, complete. I am perfect, whole, complete, right? Affirmation just being a positive statement of something that you would like to experience. And then you can do another set, maybe include your kid. What's your kid's name?
Zia and Arrow.
Yeah, so Zia is perfect, whole, complete. Arrow is perfect, whole. You can go through your whole family like that. And you've sent some positive energy to your family. You've moved your body. You've reminded yourself to be in the present moment. You're seeing people for the best that they are instead of focusing on the negative aspects, which we have a tendency to do. And so it can be a much more powerful experience than just doing 5 sets of 5 push-ups. So yeah, it's just different ways to think about things. I talk about sitting in a resting squat, which is something that is amazingly beneficial for our mobility and hip joints. And it's something that we don't do a lot of. A lot of us don't do yoga. We all have heard of yoga and we may have been to a yoga class here and there, but the idea of getting up, going to Lululemon, buying some yoga pants.
Because that's what you got to do.
Getting to do yoga. Finding a studio, signing up for a package, figuring out what time works with your schedule, driving over in traffic, looking for parking, going in, being the new person, being embarrassed, not knowing what you're doing, teachers calling you out, you know, listening to loud music, they're going on, all this stuff. It's just, okay, I'm not going to do it. It's just too much. But if you could just sit in a resting squat, which is basically just sitting in a squat, like you see, if you've ever been to the Asian countries, the Southeast Asian countries, or maybe even India too, you see these guys, they're sitting, and women too, but mainly guys are perching down in a squat. And that's just how they chill. That's how they hang out with each other. They just sit in a squat. And it's been shown that that is one of the most beneficial body positions that we can get into for our hips, for our back, for our entire body, nervous system and immune system and all that. And
all right, everybody squat for the rest of this conversation.
So it's just like encouraging people.
Look, that makes me want to like
like, instead of worrying about a 90-minute yoga class, just do a 30-second squat and you've done yoga for the day. And then tomorrow, do another 30-second squat and do that every day for the week, and then work up to like a 45-second squat. And it could be kind of fun, and you don't have to squat all the way down. You can just sit on a table, a low table, or you can put your heels, you can support your heels with a book or something like that, and just kind of figure out a way. And it's really teaching you how to find comfort and discomfort in other areas. So then maybe you go to YouTube and look up, oh, how do I change a tire? How do I wash clothes with my hands? How do I, you know, make this other thing that I use for this purpose work for this other purpose? And that way you start to give yourself more and more freedom in your life as well.
All right, so we're going to stay hydrated this summer, right? And what are we also going to do? Take care of our skin. You know, I don't have to tell you how important sunscreen is, but I don't know if you have had such a hard time finding sunscreen for your face like I have. Well, I gotcha. Bliss Oma's Photonic Light Shifting Solution. It is a broad spectrum facial sunscreen and moisturizer. Is the jam. You're gonna wanna go grab it ASAP. It is clean and elegant mineral sunscreen. It's the elegant mineral sunscreen of your dreams, to be honest. You can enjoy the sun every day with nutritious ingredients, no irritants, and a perfecting finish. It spreads on your skin like a dream and leaves a flawless finish. None of that, you know, like white residue. It has acne-friendly whole raw oils and intensive botanicals provide your skin a banquet of nourishment. You won't find any skin-disrupting silicones, just vitamins and antioxidants to help skin rebuild every day. What? Yes, please. Trust me, you are going to want to get this sunscreen from Bliss Oma if you hate the greasy and shiny finish of many sunscreens. If silicones clog your skin and cause acne breakouts for you, if you want to nourish your skin while protecting it, of course you do. You want your skin to look great even without makeup. Seriously, all of Bliss Oma's skincare products make my skin look and feel so freaking good that I oftentimes don't even want to put on my like tinted moisturizer stuff. You also want to get their sunscreen if humid summer hair often makes you avoid wearing sunscreen. And if chemical sunscreens irritate your skin and nose, go get Bliss Oma's Photonic Light Shifting Solution. You're going to love it. And while you're there, get the spray deodorant. I mean, their regular deodorant is great too, but for me in the summer, spray deodorant is so nice for the start of the day and for refreshing throughout the day. Honestly, every single one of their products that I have used is amazing, and they are the absolute real deal. It's authentic green beauty meets traditional herbal knowledge for the best of both worlds. They use cutting-edge chemistry, and they are putting in original recipes that offer a huge range of phytonutrients that benefit every skin need, including sensitivities. Okay, go to blissoma.com, get yourself some deodorant, get yourself some sunscreen, get yourself all the freaking products. And feel free to DM me @_TrishaHuffman. But also, if you go to blissoma.com, there's a way to like take a skin survey and fill out this form. And so they will send you an email of what products they think will be best for your skin from an actual human. Okay, go to blissoma.com. Yeah. And that's one of my like main mantras is any minutes is more than no minutes. Any progress is more than no progress. Baby steps are steps, because I find we do talk ourselves out of doing any, because it's like we're not doing the idea of what we imagine we should be doing, or like, oh yeah, an hour yoga or this, or no, I can't do it because I don't have an hour. Like, great. You can do one stretch and that actually, you can actually feel a difference. From go, I don't have time to meditate or whatever. Okay, what about taking 3 deep breaths? Like any, you can really get, like you can have a benefit from any. I want to ask you about the split testing your heart voice.
Yes. Yes. So when I talk about the heart voice, what I'm referring to is the voice of your intuition. We all
the
have
ever
that
elusive
voice.
Intuition.
Yes. And the reason why it's elusive is also why they refer to it as the still small voice. It's barely audible. We can barely detect it, especially with all the noise and distractions that are happening around us. So when someone says, oh, you should just follow your heart. Okay, well, I don't know what my heart's saying. And you're actually being honest. You don't know clearly what your heart is saying, because there's so many other voices that are in there, and a lot of them are disguised as your heart, but they're not actually your heart voice. So in order to figure out which one is the voice of your heart, I recommend a daily stillness practice, 5-10 minutes, right? And what that does is it helps to turn up the volume on the real voice of your heart? Will the real voice of your heart step forward? And then what helps to turn up the volume even more is following what you think is the voice of your heart. Now, how do you know that a voice is the voice of your heart versus some imposter? The voice of your heart is going to almost always take you out of your comfort zone. So when people say, oh, you know, I was listening to my body told me to eat a pint of ice cream, my body told me to watch Netflix and to do self-care today, that's not exactly the voice of your heart. I'm not negating that your body didn't tell you that, but maybe it wasn't your heart. Maybe it wasn't that part of the body. The heart says stuff like, you're in an argument with your spouse, you should apologize first. That's what your heart says. Your heart tells you, do the right thing. Your heart tells you to take a chance on yourself, to bet on yourself. You can do it. You have everything it takes. Your heart tells you to hold the person's hand who is having a hard time. You know, compliment that other person's shoes that you keep staring at and admiring. You know, these little moments that we just dismiss. Oh, I'm going to look crazy. Oh, I'm going to look creepy. Oh, I'm going to look foolish. Oh, they're upset with me. Oh, they should apologize first. And so it kind of gets us, it allows us to kind of step up into our more expansive self, because that's how it usually feels. When you have an honest conversation with somebody, you feel better for having that honest conversation. When you compliment someone and you see them receive it with warmth and sincerity, it makes you feel better as well. And so it's almost like a service opportunity when you're hearing these voices. But the only way to really know that this is indeed the voice of my heart is to follow it. So whatever you think is the voice of your heart, I encourage you to do what the internet marketers do when they're running Google ads or Facebook ads, which is you split test. And what that means is they'll run two versions of the same ad and they'll change one headline and they'll see which one performs better. Or they'll change the photo and they'll see which one performs better. So you're looking for which action performs better, which one gives you that expansive feeling. Yeah, which one gives you that expansive feeling? And if it doesn't, then you know that that's that quality of that instruction, that nudge, is not your heart voice. So if you eat a pint of ice cream, that probably is not going to make you feel better afterward. If you eat 10 donuts, that's because you're sad, that's probably not going to make you feel better afterwards. It'll be a short term, you know, when you take that first bite, it'll feel some way, but afterwards, you're not going to feel great. But if you have an inner nudging saying, you know, go and help this person out, even though they didn't help you out, you can feel better from that because you're not really doing it for them. You're doing it for yourself, right? And we're in this, you know, the spiritual perspective on this is that you're the only person in the room. Everyone else is an expression or extension of you. So it's not like me and then this other person and all this space in between us. It's all you. It's all you. So giving to someone else is giving to yourself. Being kind to someone else is being kind to yourself. This is the spiritual perspective that it's easy to lose perspective of this when we are upset and angry and out of the present moment. So
I love that visual.
The heart's job is to really get you back to that center, to get you centered back in this idea that everything and everyone is an extension of you. And when you help someone, you help yourself. So forgiving someone is really not about them, it's about you. It's about setting you free.
I also was seeing in that, like, you know, how easy we can get, like, into comparison, or we see somebody get something that we want, or how come they're doing that and I've worked as hard, and so like those feelings can come up. And I always do try to shift into like looking at what I'm feeling and like how can I go from comparison to celebration, like, oh, if that happened for them, then that means it's possible for me too, or like this too. But like seeing that, so with the image you were just giving too, it's like, well, that's part of me. So if that person's winning or they got that opportunity, like seeing, like, if we're all one, like it, you know what I mean? It helps me lean more into what I already do with the celebration, but just even having that image of like, that's an extension of me. Good. Like, that's so amazing. You got that. Like, oh, wow. And I love the idea of the split testing, but even just testing, like letting yourself look at it that way, because it can be this pressure of, I don't know, is this my intuition? Is this whatever? Do I trust it? Well, like, okay, well, why don't I let myself test it? Just try it out. Like, it feels less serious or not. You know what I mean? Like, oh, but I don't know. Like, just let yourself play with it. Try it out. Test it. And that also made me think about how I don't love it. Can sometimes work, but I'm not 100% down with if it's not a F yes, it's a no. Because for me, like we're saying, this quiet voice, right? And that's the thing, like this discomfort. A lot of times for me, the things that are like my intuition saying yes, it's usually not like a F yes. It's a like, oh, I don't know, this feels right, but I'm scared, but this, whatever. And so that doesn't like show up to me. And so that like messaging out there of if it's not an F yes, it's a no. I'm like, yes, that sounds fucking awesome. All in. But the truth is a lot of the stuff for me is like this little bubbly, it doesn't feel like that all in energy. Like,
yeah, no, I have a section called scary yeses. And it's exactly what you said. Like this F yes thing is like, it's easy and obvious. Of course you're going to say yes to something that
sounds
obvious.
Really cool. Like,
yeah, but the scary yeses are the ones that are really going to move the needle. You know, do you want to go to therapy? After dating a string of narcissists,
fuck maybe yes. You. No, like, yeah, it's like, it's usually
you
not
do recovery. You know, you've been drinking a little bit much lately.
Fuck
you wanna
yes.
Do you want to do an ice bath? You want to take a cold shower? You know, these things that are require us to look at ourselves. That's how you're going to move the needle. And that's primary heart voice territory right there. You know, that's really how you know you're following your heart, is that it's pushing you in the direction of your growth zone, which is almost always uncomfortable, at least initially, until you get used to it. And then when you start to see progress, then you start to appreciate the fact that it is uncomfortable, because it means that you're breaking down old habits that have not been serving you well. And that's a necessary part of the change process.
Yes, I love that, because I think, like, again, I think too that a big reason people don't know what their intuition is or that it is elusive is because we're like made to believe that it is this big F yes voice. And every time you hear it, it's like sirens and bells going off and a spotlight. You're like, you won. And it's like, it sometimes feels like that for me, or it feels like that after you've made the choice and gotten over the like discomfort. I'm like, I think that's why people have a hard time finding it and trusting it, because we think it's this like we're. Every time you hear it, you're just lit up. This is the answer. Awesome. I can't wait to read those chapters. Okay. And I just want to like reiterate, since we did talk a lot about your stuff and how it started with the getting rid of all the stuff, and how the book is not about getting rid of your stuff. It's looking at the stuff inside, but I make up that can propel a lot of getting rid of external stuff as well.
Right. I use the idea of getting rid of your stuff and moving into a backpack as a metaphor. Like, that was my version of spiritual minimalism, but someone else's version of spiritual minimalism may be starting the podcast they've been thinking about starting, you know, or joining the pickleball team that they're afraid to join for whatever reason, or, you know, creating community in some way, or doing something that's going to require you, again, to get out of your comfort zone. And there are going to be a multitude of learnings in that process that you can't anticipate right now until you take that leap of faith. And then you'll see that, oh, there is no happiness on the other side of this. I'm doing this from the bit of happiness that I have inside. Like, that's the part of you, that fulfillment you have inside is a part of you that's urging you and nudging you in the direction of that thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to other people. And maybe it doesn't even make a lot of sense to you. But you'll see that once you do that, you are creating opportunities to either serve or for other people to serve. And that's really what it's all about when we talk about purpose. Again, you don't have to you don't have to worry about your purpose. Just follow your curiosity and your purpose will find you. And that will almost always involve some degree of service, which is what which is what we find to be the most fulfilling out of all the things that we do, is our service. And that could be raising a family. It could be tending to a garden, a community garden, something like that. But it's something that's helping people.
Yeah. And I love that you brought it back around to like, it's sort of, it's not like once I do this, then. So it's like, or even like, oh, once I give up, oh, life gave up all of his stuff. And then he found this. So great. Maybe I'll just give up my stuff and then I'll feel like this, that, whatever. It's like, well, perhaps, and it's the mental work of that too. But like, and that, yeah, like that, that's what's motivating you on your way. It's not like give up and don't have goals and want to have change. Cause it's not, I think that can be too. It's like, oh, right. So it's not once I do this, then I'll feel this, but like feel, yeah, like feel good about yourself and why you're doing the things on the way to do them. And then you can keep going that way instead of, oh, once I do this, then I will have this feeling. Like, go ahead. But your life is right now. That's always that too. I'm like the reminder of your life is right now today. So are you going to work for 3 years, 3 months, whatever, to hit that goal? And then what happens? Your life is today. So how can you be enjoying it, feel fulfilled, feel this purpose today?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. And the sooner we start cultivating it, the quicker we're going to be able to start to act upon it. And, you know, this is idea that, again, achievements are the source of happiness. And people will spend an inordinate amount of time, energy, money, resources. They'll sacrifice their health and relationships in order to achieve a big goal. And then they get surprised when they get to the other side of that goal that they don't feel any happier than they were before that they started out trying to achieve this goal. As if
they might even feel worse.
May feel worse. But, you know, I think there's a profound disappointment that it doesn't increase the baseline level of their happiness, peace, or fulfillment. And what I've been talking about for many years now is the idea that I'm not anti-achievement. By, you know, achievements are important for feeling like you live a purposeful life, especially if your achievements are helping people. I think that's really important. But don't mistake that for thinking that you're going to reach fulfillment as a result of that. You need to be as diligent, as consistent, as committed to your inner work in order to find, to have that sense of fulfillment being cultivated in tandem with the achievement. And that could give you just a little bit extra energy to keep the achievement process going as a result of thinking, oh, you know, this is not worth it. I'm giving up because it's not happening fast enough or because people don't get it in the way that I get it, or it's not paying me as much as I thought it was going to pay me, and these kinds of concerns, because there's not a lot of fulfillment that's being experienced inside in that process of achievement. So achievements and being happy are like playing softball and painting the sidewalk. It's like two completely different things. They're completely unrelated.
I was like, where is that going? Okay, I get it. It's really not going anywhere. That's the point. No, I'm just kidding.
Just because you play softball doesn't mean that the sidewalks are going to get painted any quicker. It's ridiculous, right? But that's kind of how ridiculous it is when we think happiness is going to come from grinding and hustling my way to this startup or selling my company or getting a certain amount of downloads to my podcast or any of those kind of things. Being verified on Instagram, you're not going to be happy once you get verified on Instagram, unfortunately.
That's why I refuse to pay for it. I'm like, what? I'm going to pay to be like verified now that that's what you have to do? Like, so then people will see me a certain way?
But people, there are people out there right now who feel that once they become verified or once they reach a certain status,
once they have a certain amount of flat followers, or
they're going to get, yeah, they're going to have this sense of achievement and happiness and peace. And this is not, it's just ridiculous.
I am with you 1,000%. Okay. I keep wanting to call it spiritual minimalism. Travel Light. Travel Light is the new book. And this is the fourth book. Go get them. Last thing I'm going to ask you, what are you claiming for yourself right now?
What am I claiming for myself right now? I'm just really being grateful. You know, I'm really trying to double down on my own. I'm in the process like everybody else. I get seduced like everybody else into thinking that some future achievement, like if I could become a bestseller, oh my God, can you imagine? Yeah. So I have to keep reminding myself to just come back to the moment. And one of the best and quickest ways to do that is just to be grateful, just to be as grateful as you can possibly be. If I have to walk up the stairs because the elevator's not working, grateful for the fact that I have strength in my legs to do that. And some people out there would give anything in the world to be able to walk up a flight of stairs. And grateful that I have food to eat, and grateful that I have people who want to have conversations with me on podcasts, grateful that I have a publisher, and you know, just all the things. When you look at all the things that have gone your way, there would be a list of millions upon millions of things that have allowed us to be where we are right now, having the experience we're having right now. Even though compared to other people, it may not be what we think is the pinnacle experience, but there's still a lot of beauty happening around us right now. And I just want to indulge in that as much as possible.
Yeah. And also, now is all we really have. Who knows what's happening tomorrow? It's like, yeah, you might hit the bestseller list when it comes out. Or who knows?
Hit by a bus the next day.
Yeah. And that is the unfortunate truth. Yeah. Probably all of a sudden they could be like, books are no longer allowed. Sorry, everyone. I don't know. but yeah, now is all we have. So let's end this, everyone, with gratitude. Just start naming things you're grateful for. There's so much. And even, yeah, like, it's, of course, I feel like gratitude these days can be something to like roll your eyes at, like, oh yeah, it's gratitude, but it really does make a difference. That's why everybody talks about it. And I also want to be like the reminder, I'm always like, you don't have to be grateful for like the hard time, because I bet a lot of people out there are going through something really hard and it feels unfair and it's terrible. That I don't feel you need to be grateful for the hard, challenging things that are happening. But it's okay, what else can you be grateful for? Like, you probably are going to learn and grow and evolve from that hard thing, but you don't have to believe it's happening for you in this moment. But what, look at the other stuff in your life. And the fact that you're listening to a podcast. How amazing. Be grateful for this conversation.
You can hear.
This technology that grants you access to conversations with people. We really do have so much. Okay, everyone, did you squat? Why don't you squat and list some things you're grateful for at the same time? Maybe that, you know what? Maybe we can make that be a regular habit. I was going to say daily habit, but a regular most of the time habit. Do a little squat, do a little gratitude. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Light and all of the things that we got to go into. Definitely get his book, Travel Light. Like I said, this is his fourth book, so you can go check out his other books. The link for it will be in the show notes. Light has a podcast. I was on it last year. You might want to listen to that if you haven't. Go back and listen to him on the first time he was on as well. And I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for listening. I don't know if anybody stays on for this end outro part, but if you do, thank you. If you listen to the first 5 minutes, thank you, even though you're not going to hear this. I'm really grateful for this. I love having these conversations so freaking much. And I would love to hear from you. So please share the episode. Send me a DM @_TrishaHuffman. Let me know that you're listening, what you're loving, all of the things. And also @ClaimItPodcast too, of course. All right. What are you going to do today to claim some joy?